Hello and welcome to the Dune Minute Podcast, your place to deep dive minute by minute into the cinematic adaptation of Frank Herbert's World of Dune. I'm one of your hosts, John.
And I'm Zach.
Seem a little sad.
You did the last one.
Yeah, well, it's okay. Yeah. You can do the next one.
I thought this was an equitable venture, but that's fine.
There are five episodes. How are we going to keep track of it week over week? I don't. First of all, I don't listen to the episodes.
I know. You've never listened to a single one.
Yep. And you know what? Maybe I just wanted to do the intro this week.
That's fine.
Hello, we're talking about moving day today.
Yes, we are. We're rolling into our second wordless minute.
Yep.
Very excited. A lot of important dialogue happens here.
Moving day is stressful for anyone, but I think under the conditions that the Atreides are feeling, it's more than stressful.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely it is.
Hey, move away from your lovely planet that you like. Go live on this.
I thought you were talking about me. I was like, what? Move away from what?
Yeah, move away from Earth. Get out of here. Move away from this lovely planet that you like. Go live in a desert. Okay, bye.
That's pretty much what's going on here.
Yeah.
I like to think in another universe, they had, you know, it's been a 2 minute montage, or this will be about 2 minute montage.
Sure.
Two and a half maybe. Which is right about a good amount of time to have Billy Joel's Moving Out playing in the background here. So in a different universe, maybe that was playing during this.
Bill Joel's moving out.
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe they couldn't get the rights.
Just have someone in the background yodeling it.
No. Yeah. It's an extended Oh Hello reference.
Yes.
Yes.
Sounds, I'm sure. I'm Gil Faison.
We see, people moving boxes out of one of the main rooms in Castle Caladan. I don't know if it's actually called Castle Caladan.
We like alliteration.
Yeah, it sounds cool.
Yeah.
That's what I call it in my notes. We see Jessica's neck that needs some comfort, and a hand gives her that comfort.
Presumably Latos. Because otherwise...
Someone's getting real fresh.
Yeah. and she reaches back up and kind of does a grab his hand.
Loving embrace.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the word.
I was looking for the ring that would have signified, yes, this is Leto.
I think he wears it on his left hand.
Yeah, he does. He does. That just would have been a nice little piece of continuity.
Like a, hey, by the way, this is
her husband grabbing her neck.
Well, it's her. It's not her husband.
Husband. Sorry. No, you're not husband. Not husband. Yeah, we'll get to that.
it's a lot. Anyways.
Yep.
Our next shot I want to talk about for more than the duration of this minute of the movie. We see the bull again.
See the bull.
So a couple observations. First of all, it's a fucking huge bull.
Yes.
I think at the end of the scene with the bull, there are four people standing in front of the head of this bull.
Hmm.
And the bull is still, and they're standing side by side. The bull's horns are still wider than all four of them.
Dang.
This is a big fucking bull.
Man.
But we see, for the first time, we're on level with the bull. It's not above. Because before, right, it was at the top of a door frame. And
yeah,
like, it's very imposing above everything. This time, we're seeing it on level. And we see this bull is scarred the fuck up. It's got a huge like scar across its nose. It's got a lot of smaller gashes in its face. And you can actually even see in the horns itself, chips and gashes and stuff in the horns. So it seems that this bull, which we know is the one that killed the old Duke,
mm-hmm,
had been in the bullfighting ring for probably quite a while.
Yeah. Seasoned.
Yeah. I did a little bit of research into the bulls themselves. Granted, we're getting into Brian Herbert decisions for lore, so...
How dare you?
I know.
I'm just kidding. Go for it.
Supposedly, and I'm not... not super happy that I did this much research, which I realized that it was Brian's, but we're here. I guess it is canon, technically speaking. But supposedly the bulls come from Seleucus Secundus. They are Seleucian bulls.
Okay.
But that's they're, cool. or that's where they're from originally, but then they're raised on Caladan. So.
And, okay. You know what? I don't hate that.
Yeah.
I don't hate that. That's a nice little piece.
What I hate is that in the books, apparently they're like multi-horned and then they have spines on their back and stuff. Like just.
No, they can just be normal bulls, just, man.
Yeah. And thank God they did that with this bull in the movie.
Yeah.
So someone, whether it's Denis or one of the writers or producers, was just like, how about we just make it a regular bull? And it portrays all the same things.
Yep.
Looking into bulls within the Dune universe, funny enough, the name Harkonnen is a Finnish name.
Okay.
That means oxy or ox-like person.
Okay.
Apparently, Frank Herbert just saw the last name Harkonnen in a phone book, which if you're having trouble trying to come up with names for people for a story,
sure.
Phone book's a good place to look. You got all sorts of names that you can kind of pick from.
For those who don't know, a phone book is something that used to be delivered to houses.
Everyone's house.
Everyone's just, houses for free.
It was thrown in your driveway.
It was half advertisements, half the names, address, and phone numbers of everyone who lived in your area.
Yeah. But yeah, Harkonnen, I'm not going to try to pronounce the Finnish spelling because the way that it's spelled in Dune is not the way that it's spelled in Finnish, because in Finnish it's got like hella umlauts and stuff. But yeah, it essentially means ox-like person.
Okay. So, well, that's kind of another layer of the feud and animosity between the Atreides and the Harkonnens.
Brian made sure to make it go even deeper than that, if you want to get into Brian Herbert lore.
Well, it's not. Let's move
okay,
on.
Okay, cool. and that was the point where I was like, this seems dumb. Yeah. And I feel like a lot of people that read or that read the Frank books that then went to read the Brian books also would agree with the statement, this seems dumb.
You don't have to explain everything. You can leave.
He does.
You can leave some stuff to the imagination or to context clues. There's the opposite side of that is what Frank did, where he never explained anything.
Yeah.
Or explained very little throughout his books.
And then you could have a happy medium where a bunch of nerds get together and write an encyclopedia and say, hey, we did your work for you.
Yeah.
Read this. Is it good? Sure.
Yeah. Not everything needs a backstory.
No,
that's what we're dealing with Star Wars at the moment.
Yes.
Where every single thing gets a backstory in its own 8-episode series.
And then everyone gets burned out on it and nobody likes it anymore.
Anyways, I had a note about how cool the box looked like. You know, it was a pretty intricate.
These are not IKEA boxes.
No.
These are like some dude was in a workshop with like a million different chisels kind of boxes.
Yeah. They looked really, really cool. As someone who's done a little bit of woodworking in the past, like this looked very hard. And I love a good custom box, man.
Yeah,
they're real nice. So
I mean, when you're as rich as the Atreides are, which comparatively to the Harkonnens and the Emperor, they're probably broke boy shit.
Nah, they're still rich. They have their humble pundi rice. but wood is they're in no shortage of wood.
Nope,
on Caladan, so it makes sense that you know this is again just a natural resource that they are able to use. Fits right in line with the way that their houses are built and how everything just kind of seems to fit into nature. They use the resources of the land. Everything's just got a very grounded aesthetic.
We see the crate being closed up. Like I said, there are four men holding the last panel as they're closing the crate, and the box is still wider than them. So like I said, the bull is huge. And then we cut to Paul walking along the beaches of Caladan.
Mm-hmm.
One thing that I thought was strange is that Paul doesn't have any kind of security detail. Like in the scene where we saw Paul going to go see his father in the graveyard.
Yeah.
Leto had four or more guards there with him. You would assume, given the severity of everything that's going on in universe right now and the hostilities that are known between the Harkonnens and the Atreides, that Leto would have had a security detail on Paul. Maybe, but instead, in
the back. Yeah, we don't see him, but maybe they're there. Maybe they're around.
Maybe, but instead, all we see is Paul just seemingly walking by himself along the beach.
Yep.
We see more of the ships in the sky behind him. Wistful
look into the sunset.
Yeah, he takes a moment to kind of put his hand in the sea for probably the last time.
Yeah.
Or as far as he knows, the last time. And looks off on the sun setting over the ocean.
Before we talk about the next scene, I wanted to pose a question. Just because, again, I was taking notes as fillers. You just make sure we comment on everything. What do you think happens to their house and their castle after they leave?
I'm sure there is some amount of Atreides forces, workers, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. We'll just call them some amount of Atreides that remain on Caladan.
Okay. Yeah, I'm sure you're right.
I'm sure it's like, if you had to break it down, it's probably like 98% of all the Atreides go to Arrakis. Sure. But either there are some that are remaining on Caladan, or maybe there's a smaller house that serves the greater House Atreides that, you know, takes over and watches the place for them while they're gone.
Yeah. There's like a Vrbo situation. The Airbnb.
They're just Airbnb-ing this massive ass castle out for like $1 billion a night. But they leave.
Solaris. We don't use dollars.
That's here. True. Sorry. My bad. We'll have to get through. They probably sent Thufir like a, hey, like, can you calculate how much the fair market value is on rent for this place? No, but they, if I had to guess, there's probably like a lower house that.
Yeah, could be a small contingent of Atreides staff stayed
somewhere in their fiefdom.
House took it over for a little while. Yeah, that makes sense. Okay, I don't have an answer to that. I was just, you know, just a question that I wanted to just to pose. But yeah, then we cut to a highliner.
We cut to a highliner, and we see those massive ships that were rising out of the ocean.
Tiny little specks.
You have to look so hard to see these tiny little specks on the screen.
Did you try to count?
I have a screenshot because in my notes I take screenshots of everything. Okay.
Oh, God, this is thrilling radio, John. I should have done this before. I did before. And I counted at least 50. Once you get towards the back, they get real, real, real hard.
I count 54.
Yeah. Okay. So 50 plus. Tiny little specks coming out of this highliner. And we can assume that each of those little tiny specks are roughly the same size as that ship that we saw rising out of the ocean.
That massive ship rising out of the ocean. Yeah. Once again, highliners are fucking huge.
Yep. They're massive.
And
the camera pans up and we see the orange planet of Arrakis.
We are at
Arrakis.
At Arrakis. We have arrived on Arrakis. Yeah. There we go. That's the phrase there.
Well, Arrakis is what you call the top. And then on the top of the planet, and the bottom is it's Antarrakis.
Shut the fuck up.
Okay, anyways. Then cut to a white screen. And I got to tell you, man, when I was taking my notes last night, I was in my dark office watching this
and just flashbang,
absolutely blinded by this transition.
Same. So it took me a second to kind of realize the perspective of the camera on this. So you are the perspective is you're basically standing on the ground looking straight up.
Yep.
Which I realized doing that is going to be awesome for you to edit later on, with my voice, like
you look trailing away. You look away often. So
shut up.
I have to do this.
You're on the ground looking straight up and you see the ships descending. The ships look like bombs.
Yeah. I put it here. I was like this, the design of these ships, it invokes like the classic, like World War II, bombs that would, you know, would be dropped. So I don't know if that's a foreshadowing moment or maybe that was a little subtext there. I don't know, but
Dune doesn't have any subtext in it at all. Zach, what are you talking about?
Not one iota of subtext.
No. There's no commentary on imperialism or capitalism or dangers of human over consumption and ecological systems or anything like that. What are you talking about?
So yeah, we get that. And I'm just gonna skip right over that.
No, it's fine. It's literally what Dune is about.
And then yeah, right in the middle of this landing sequence, that's when our minute ends.
Correct.
So yeah, a lot of good stuff here. No good words, but a lot of good imagery and another good montage bit.
We have left Caladan.
We've left and we are almost officially on Arrakis.
Yep. We're in Arrakis's atmosphere right now.
Yep. So. The Arrakisphere.
God damn it.
All right, we're stretching.
If you want to yell at Zach's stupid jokes, you can reach out to us. DuneMinute@gmail.com. You can also find us on Twitter @DuneMinute. Or if you want to yell at Zach directly, @TheDuneMinute on Instagram. He's the one that owns that account. So yell at him. I hate these jokes.
You love them. You love them.
Do I?
I don't know. I'm not stopping them, though. That's for sure. All right, cool. Well, we will be back tomorrow to talk about minutes 34 and 35 as we continue this landing sequence. So yeah, join us then. We'll keep going through this wordless minutes. See ya.
See you later.